This is The Guardian.
I'm Jane Lee, and this is The Full Story. Last month, protests against Solomon Islands Prime Minister turned violent. A police station and a number of Chinese-owned businesses were burnt down in the capital of Honiara. The bodies of three people were discovered in one burnt-out building. Peacekeepers from Australia, Fiji, Papua New Guinea and New Zealand flew to Solomon Islands to assist. Behind this violence is a bigger story about long-running economic tensions, allegations of corruption and even international politics. So what's driving this conflict on our doorstep? And what role is Australia playing in it? Today, unrest in Solomon Islands. It's Thursday, the 16th of December.
I was at the Honiara CBD area when the protests started.
On Wednesday, the 24th of November, reporter Gina Kekea was attending a journalism workshop at a hotel in Honiara's CBD when she heard protesters shouting outside. It was peaceful to begin with.
And the session was disrupted when we started seeing people, you know, running and shouting and all that.
Gina saw a large group of mostly men gathering outside the gates of the National Parliament.
So the National Parliament is situated right in the centre of Honiara on a hilltop overlooking the main seaport area in Honiara. So to access the National Parliament, there's a footpath right in the centre of Honiara CBD. So that's where the protest started. So it was at the bottom of the hill at the footpath where the people were shouting and wanting to go into the gate to go up the hill. They wanted to go into the Parliament area because Parliament session has just started that Wednesday morning as well.
What did you see at that point?
Around 300 just standing outside the gate. They have a good crowd that also joined when they were there.
So we start with, you know, several hundred people gathered outside the gates. What happened next?
They just broke in to the gates and then just ran up the hill, basically. The police were there, fortunately, for the National Parliament building. So even though they got into the Parliament area, the police were able to control by using tear gas and also rubber bullets.
But in the process, a leaf hut, which was used by MPs and parliamentary staff for cigarette breaks and informal meetings, was targeted.
And then, unfortunately, a leaf hut that was beside the main Parliament building was burnt during the protest that got out of hand. Yeah.
Eventually, police managed to contain the protest at the National Parliament, but more protesters joined the crowd and headed towards Kukum on the eastern side of Honiara, throwing stones and rubbish onto the highway as they went. They arrived at a police station and set the building on fire.
Managed to speak to a police officer. So she just managed to poke her head outside and saw that there was quite a big group of people with stones and, you know, just shouting. And then she told her colleagues, they all ran into another room where they hid. And that's when they started choking because the protesters have, you know, also put the police building on fire.
The police officer was lucky to escape the burning building, but the protest continued and didn't die down until later that evening. The next day, Gina says the protesters moved to Honiara's Chinatown district and began burning and looting Chinese-owned businesses.
So in Chinatown, they basically started destroying and looting and then burning the place. And there were some shops, you know, where they have the local people guarding it, saying that, okay, you can just go in, get whatever you want, don't burn the building. Yeah, but a good number of the buildings in Chinatown were burnt.
And was anyone hurt during these protests?
So there were three bodies that were found dead in one of the shops in Chinatown. There were some innocent people that were also caught in, you know, from the tear gas, unfortunately, that gets into their eyes because some of the protesting or rioting that happened also close to residential areas.
I imagine
For you, this would have been pretty scary at the time, watching all of this go on around you. How did you feel watching these protests unfold?
Quite sad, actually, and quite surprising. Like, seeing people doing this, you know, it's really quite shocking. Cannot comprehend what, you know, was going through their minds, what they were doing. It's just like you're watching a movie.
The protests ended up lasting 3 days, wreaking havoc across Honiara. But at the beginning, they had just one demand, that the Prime Minister, Manase Sogavare, step down. How has Solomon Islands Prime Minister, Manase Sogavare, responded to the protests?
Not good at all. He was whisked away and in hiding somewhere. He was saying, because all that's been happening is in Honiara, that Solomon Islands is still safe. And the government will continue to lead the country, and that those who are responsible, meaning those that protested and instigators of the protest, would face full force of the law and announce the 36-hour lockdown, which was to be enforced by the police.
Then the Prime Minister also requested peacekeeping assistance from a number of countries.
I think the first one that we heard was Australia.
And the Australian government has agreed to respond to that request. And we've agreed to send a detachment of up to 23 AFP personnel who are deploying immediately.
And later we have the PNG and Fiji and then New Zealand also being requested to come in to support the local police here in maintaining law and order, and of course to helping peacekeeping. Since they've come in, peace and normalcy have started to come back to the capital especially.
I will say that, you know, you can't take the demands of a crowd of people burning down buildings in Honiara as representative of the whole community.
Mihai Sora is a research fellow in the Pacific Islands program at the Lowy Institute in Sydney.
But certainly there has been some anxiety and frustration with Prime Minister Sogavare himself.
So Solomon Islands Prime Minister Manase Sogavare came to power in 2019. What do we need to know about how he's led the country since then?
Prime Minister Sogavare has always been a very polarising leader. Since taking power this time round, he has made some decisions which are seen as a little bit autocratic or authoritarian. He's threatened to ban Facebook. As part of Solomon Island's COVID response, he's enacted states of emergency numerous times, which have played into people's frustrations.
One group of people who expressed their frustration with Sogavare throughout this protest were from the island of Malaita, which is about 100 kilometres from Honiara.
Malaita is the most populous province in Solomons, but it is among the least developed, certainly compared to Guadalcanal province, where the capital Honiara is located, and of course where the central government is housed.
And their frustration has been building ever since a decision made by Prime Minister Sogavare. Since the 1980s, Solomon Islands had maintained bilateral relations with Taiwan. Malaita, in particular, had benefited from this relationship.
Among the elements of that relationship was a Taiwanese technical assistance and development program to various parts of the country, and Malaita was one of the recipients of that program, so support with agriculture and other economic development activities. And you could say that there was a degree of, you know, positive engagement between that Taiwanese development assistance and people in Malaita province.
But in 2019, Prime Minister Sogavare's government made a sudden diplomatic switch from Taiwan to China.
So when the switch was made, basically it came at a very short notice, and everyone were caught by surprise, basically. Taiwan just had to close the office and leave. The Taiwanese diplomats went back, and people of Malaita were really quite unhappy, especially the provincial government. They were really quite unhappy with what happened.
The reasoning for this, according to the Solomon Islands government, was that China had more money and could better support Solomon Islands.
So basically, you know, China being one of the stronghold countries in the world, and having a relationship with China would be of advantage to Solomon Islands.
But it wasn't just the decision to switch allegiances that frustrated people. Mihai Sora says there were other unsavoury allegations against the national government that came with it.
That switch came amid allegations of personal inducements to MPs by Beijing, funded by Beijing, to win over their support for that switch. It came amid allegations of counter offers from Taiwan to retain their support. So certainly we saw this injection of instability and very untransparent way of taking a political decision that the international community was very concerned about, but also Solomon Islands community was very concerned about. And these allegations that, you know, that Beijing bribed its way into the political relationship, they're still very much alive today.
China sees the Pacific as a strategically important region, but it's also deeply opposed to Solomon Islands being diplomatic allies with Taiwan, because it doesn't want Taiwan to be recognized anywhere as an independent state.
What it meant for the region is that it was another step in what is assessed to be Beijing's ambition to establish itself as a regional strategic hegemon, and also its secondary objective of eliminating that diplomatic support for Taiwan in as many places as it can.
So many in Solomon Islands are skeptical of this new relationship with China. And the premier of the province of Malaita, Daniel Suidani, has been particularly critical of this decision to switch diplomatic ties.
At the time that decision was made, there was vocal opposition from opposition MPs in Honiara Parliament. But there was also pockets of criticism and opposition to that around the archipelago of Solomon Islands. And Premier Suidani has been among the most vocal critics of that decision.
Premier Daniel Suidani was not in Honiara when the protests started, but he empathised with them, according to Gina.
So I called him when the protests started on Wednesday, and he said they've been asking for them to listen to the people's voices, but they have not. And this is what happens when the government does not listen to the people, basically. That is what he said.
But Prime Minister Sogavare denied that frustrations with his leadership were at the root of the protests, instead claiming foreign forces, namely Taiwan, was behind them.
I think Sogavare denied this, saying that the decision to switch to Beijing was the only issue. He was saying that there were foreign forces behind the protest, and I think he spoke at length in Parliament saying that Taiwan is behind the protest, and he blamed Taiwan particularly to support Malaita, provincial government, especially in this endeavour, which they categorically denied as well.
Next, long-held resentments explode into racist violence. While the protests began with people from Malaita, they were soon joined by many others in Honiara.
Demographic conditions in Honiara, namely a youth bulge where 7 out of 10 people are under the age of 30, very high rates of unemployment, lack of opportunities, jobs and education.
And as the violence continued over the following days, the protesters' specific demands and frustrations became less clear.
Most of those that were protesting and rioting, I don't even know if they even know what they're doing or even if they know what they are protesting for. They're just opportunities come up and they see it as a way where they can get whatever they want.
Gina says that many Solomon Islanders, not just people from Malaita, feel that the national government has long favoured foreign investors over locals' interests.
It's not only Malaitans that is saying this. It's also when it comes to, you know, access to infrastructure. Most of the provinces also face the same issues. And also their widespread belief that international businesses, basically, they do not provide local employment. Most Solomon Islanders, they do not have formal employment. And also foreign companies, especially not providing jobs for Solomon Islanders. If a Solomon Islander were to get the job, it would not be one, you know, that's on a higher scale or the higher bracket. It would be just like laborers, that kind of thing. And the Chinese businesses and other Asian businesses seem to have most of the work, especially when it comes to extracting resources, which people feel strongly about.
Mihai Genis told me that many Solomon Islanders feel there's a certain unfairness, a preference of foreign investment over local interests. Do you think they have some legitimate concerns here?
I would say so, yes. You know, there has been a visible uptick in foreign investment interest from mainland China into Solomon Islands since that switch. Development projects from Beijing into Solomon Islands, infrastructure, residential construction, and that resource presence as well. And not all of that interest is welcome. You know, in the resource industry, yes, it is very much seen as predatory.
All of these projects from China have brought more Chinese workers into the country, making Solomon Islanders' economic hardships even more visible, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. And while these frustrations are genuine, Mihai says they're being heightened by politicians like Malaita's Premier, Daniel Suijani.
And for a Solomon Islander who feels that they're getting a rough deal already from the MPs and from foreign investors, to now add another player and what is arguably the largest economic player in the world right now, it is a genuine source of frustration and anxiety for Solomon Islanders. And I think Suijani is maximising the tension.
It does sound like there are some real economic concerns for Solomon Islanders about foreign investment. And we also know that Chinatown and Chinese-owned businesses were specifically targeted in these recent protests. Do you think that there's a xenophobic element to these protests as well?
I think it's one thing which, unfortunately, for the Asian Chinese businesses, they seem to be the ones attacked all the time. I think it could be true in that sense.
To put it very plainly, if there's a protest outside Parliament that descends into violence, sooner or later that day you're going to see Chinatown in flames. And what you have is, you know, frustrations perhaps over this perceived exploitation of Solomon Islands by a much larger economic power. Those frustrations play out in aggression against small business owners who, by and large, have no ties with Beijing or even with Taipei. There has been a Chinese presence in Solomon Islands from the 1920s onwards. So you have families there that have been there for generations that really have contributed in a positive way to these communities. They serve a vital economic and social function in the country. But you also have this perception of economic exploitation. So you'd see that a lot of that aggression, you know, while some of those sentiments might be genuine, it's very much misdirected, and it really is, you know, Honiara shooting itself in the foot, as it were, by taking it out on these small businesses that really mostly what they're doing is delivering consumer goods and groceries to people. And you see now in the aftermath of the violence that Honiara is facing a food crisis. It's a humanitarian problem now. So they burnt down the part of the city that was delivering food and groceries to people.
How have Chinese communities in the Solomon Islands fared in the wake of these protests?
Especially for those whose businesses were burnt and they have no place to go. Some of the Chinese shop owners, that's their home as well, that was burnt down in the fire. The Chinese embassy has said that they will support their people, but otherwise some of the displaced people, they are now being looked after by church groups in Honiara. And there are some Solomon Islanders who also support by donating, you know, personal items and food items for them.
After foreign peacekeepers were drawn in and the protests died down, the conflict continued in Parliament. Opposition leader Matthew Wale tried to remove the Prime Minister, bringing a no-confidence motion to Solomon Islands National Parliament.
I think it's the first time for us in Solomon Islands to see such entertainment coming from Parliament. There's shouting and accusations. It is quite a heated debate in Parliament during the motion, yeah.
What were the key arguments? So let's start with Sogavare.
The members of Parliament represent their people, and our people elected me through their members of Parliament. Therefore, sir, I will not resign.
So he was defending the government's decision to switch to China and saying that traditional donor partners, meaning Taiwan, had not been able to assist Solomon Islands with its development challenges, and China, as an economic powerhouse, will provide the opportunity for Solomon Islands, especially to engage and address its development needs and challenges. And he said the national government does not need to bow down to the interest of Taiwan and its agents.
And if I am to be removed, it must be by the legal process, and it must be by members of parliament and not by calls to resign by Taiwan's agents, Mr. Speaker.
And Solomon Islands recognized the People's Republic of China, and that's the end of that matter.
And Sogavare also in Parliament defended the decision to switch to China, saying, quote, traditional donors could not help the country meet its current challenges. Is he referring in part to Australia here as well?
He'd be primarily referring to Australia, New Zealand, multilateral entities, World Bank, ADB. And what he'd be referring to there is that, you know, Solomon Islands still has these very acute developmental problems to do with education and health. The geography of the country makes it very difficult to have a centralized service delivery. I wouldn't say that he's holding international donors responsible for Solomon Islands' challenges, but he's saying that maybe quite rightly, you know, we could do with more assistance. And he's trying to frame that political relationship with Beijing as delivering increased economic opportunities for the country.
What about the opposition leader, Matthew Wale? What did he say in Parliament?
It is terrible that businesses were looted and destroyed.
Wale blamed Sogavare, especially for the riots, and said that China wasn't the issue. And he also said that the Prime Minister's lack of humility and willingness to listen to the people was what caused the riots.
It pales, Mr. Speaker, in comparison to the looting happening at the top, at the expense of ordinary Solomon Islanders.
And so what was the result of the vote in Parliament?
The vote of no confidence was defeated by 32 votes. And then there were 15 that voted for it, 2 that abstained from voting.
The Prime Minister last week survived a no confidence motion in Parliament. Will that put an end to the questions over his leadership for now?
Probably not. Parliament has adjourned for the year and people will be returning to their communities. But these are issues that are likely to be picked up early next year. Certainly that political conflict between the Malaita provincial authorities and the central government, that hasn't been resolved. Premier Suidani has given signals that he wants to maintain this political campaign to bring down Sogavare and to do as much political damage as he can to the government. And the opposition, has called for calm and called for peace, but they've certainly committed to maintaining their opposition to the Prime Minister. So we're going to see this political conflict play out next year as well. Hopefully we won't see a return to violence, but political unrest in Honiara, it's a regular occurrence, so we will likely see it again at some point in the future.
How would the Australian government and other countries be viewing the current tensions in Solomon Islands from a geopolitical perspective?
The Pacific is becoming more contested, and that's that contestation that puts pressure on vulnerable and fragile political settlements that we have in some Pacific Island countries. I don't think that anyone in the Pacific wants to be sort of lumped into these big generalizations. So I think it means different things in different parts of the Pacific. But geopolitics has made Solomon Islands' fragile peace even more fragile, and that political settlement has made it more tense and more fragile.
The worrying thing for us now is when Australia leaves, when Fiji leaves, Papua New Guinea leaves, that's when we should start worrying about if the protests will come up again, because we have the peacekeepers here now with all the latest, equipment and stuff and all that. So we might see the dust settled for now. But once they leave, who knows what will happen next, because if the government is not able to resolve the issue at this point in time when we still have the support of the peacekeepers here with us, when they leave, what will happen? You know, that's the most worrying thing for us now.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said when he deployed police forces to the Solomon Islands last month that they could be there a number of weeks. How long do you think Australian and other peacekeepers could stay in the Solomon Islands?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think any international presence right now would be very conscious of not wanting to contribute to the local political conflict, but certainly they're there to provide that immediate security, stability, and they will stay as long as they think they have to, but everyone would be looking to pull out at the earliest appropriate opportunity. Now, it could be a matter of weeks, it could be longer. It's really difficult to say. I think it's a very difficult decision. If you pull out too quickly and the country descends into violence, it could be worse. You know, the damage could be sustained and long-term. If you stay too long, you're seen as entrenching a political system that people are seeking to change. So I don't think there is a right answer, actually, but I don't know.
How do you feel about what's happening in Solomon Islands as a Solomon Islander yourself? What do you think could happen next?
Something needs to be done, like now. The lesson that we've learned from the riots and protest of last week, 2 weeks, should be a turning point for us in Solomon Islands. The government, they just need to accept criticism and just listen to the people more rather than being defensive all the time. I think the issues which the people are talking and those which we see happen in the riots and the protests are issues that are real to Solomon Islanders, which the government needs to, you know, learn from this. And, you know, find a way forward for us in Solomon Islands. Otherwise, we will continue to see more of this happening in the future. The Prime Minister and the government needs to see what the real issues are and try to address the issues and probably reprioritize, re-strategize, who knows. But I think the issues here are not about China. It's not about Taiwan. It's about Solomon Islands. And the government really needs to open its eyes to that.
That was Solomon Islands journalist Gina Kekea. Her coverage of Solomon Islands is part of the Guardian's Pacific project, which you can find on Guardian Australia's website. And we'll pop some links to her recent articles on the Full Story page. This episode was produced by me, Ellen Liebeder, and Pacific editor Kate Lyons. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannon. Full Story's executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and Laura Murphy-Oates. That's it for today. Catch you next time.